My name's Ted Harbach. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm alive and sober today by the very special grace of a loving God and a loving program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we kind of tricked you with that statement about relationships, because what the program really says is the workshop on the 12 steps and how it works in relationships. And that's a further trick, because see, it's how the program works in all relationships. Business, family, with yourself and your loved ones, with everyone, because the big book admonishes me to practice my principles in all my affairs. We have some seats up here in front for the for anybody that's handicapped or has trouble hearing, and if any of you want to, you know, move in closer, why, that's fine too. The audience kind of divides itself into three parts, you know, the ones that are really serious, the ones that are partly serious, and the visitors. And it's real neat to see that the whole valley is now infected with a chanting virus. That's good, you know.
God could and would if he were sought.
It really impresses the newcomers that you know two lines out of the big book. If I'd heard that when I was a newcomer, I'd said, well, later, it's another church audience response. You know, and I've got some workbooks here on the workshop. If I could have some volunteers to help pass these out, we went to some expense for these, so I'm going to give each one of you some. If you're a couple, I ask you to share one, because we don't have enough for everybody. And if you do end up with one of these, why, I would ask you to put an extra buck in the pot when the seventh tradition comes around to help offset. We only got 150 of them printed, and I think there's probably close to 200 people here right now. All gone. If you don't have one and you really want one, why, you can get one of my cards afterwards, and I'll see that you get one in the very near future, or make a new friend with somebody that has one and arrange to have them Xeroxed. I don't care who copies them. I didn't leave myself one. And we don't get the well ones here. So I need one back. Oh, great.
I forgot to pick up the seventh tradition tree right now.
You can do it anytime you want to. Well, I see it's all stapled together backwards also, which is really nifty. Pardon me? You know, one thing I'd like to ask everybody is, how many of you have heard this admonition that's going around in Alcoholics Anonymous, been going around for a long time? You hear it espoused from the podium, you hear it from sponsors, you hear it from everybody. It says, just don't drink no matter what. How many have heard that? How many of you that have your hands up believe that that works? You're excused. You do not need the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, you really can't even take the first step. And that may come as somewhat of a surprise to you. Oh, before I get started, I should tell you that I'm going to piss some people off real seriously. Usually who they are sponsors that have learned how to sponsor in
treatment centers.
You know, these are places where they write and pray about the first step for a year. You know, I just got back from New York. I shared the podium at the 13th Annual Rochester Convention. And I was very fortunate to be able to take my little daughter with me, who's now been sober 22 years. And that's still not a big deal, because she's only 22 years old. And a lot of those people grew up with her, and it through my tapes, and they would come up to her and say, well, you're not 6 years old anymore. And depending on what tape they heard, and it was really beautiful. And And I talk a lot about my daughter, because I really learned about relationships from my daughter. And back in New York, they've got whole damn groups that do one step a year. And people are dying like flies, because they do not believe the admonition in the big book. There's, you know, there are a lot of promises in my big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know how many there are in yours. Most people say 12. And you've shortchanged yourself one more time. So far, I've found 182 promises in the first 164 pages of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't believe me, read it. God, what a concept. You know, this last year, for the first time in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous, sales of the big book have fallen off below what they were the previous year. What's that tell you? You're listening to fools, is what it's telling you. If you believe that don't drink, no matter what, will work, then you do not understand what it says in the big book, where it says, there will come a time in the life of every alcoholic where there will be no mental defense against taking the first drink. That means that nothing you know cognitively is going to save you. You will be in a whiteout. You'll probably be real pissed off at the last speaker. And then, don't drink no matter what, just goes out the window. Because see, the first step of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me I'm powerless over alcohol. And don't drink no matter what indicates to me that you've got some power that I don't know anything about. And besides that, don't drink no matter what. And then they add,
even if your ass falls off.
Well, I don't know where the hell that came from either. When you're a sensitive alcoholic like I am and you're easily embarrassed, I usually drank about 2 weeks before my ass fell off. I could kind of feel it loosening up. You know? You're stroking down the street there and some Al-Anon that lurking in a bush. You never notice how they lurk? And she says, hey, Ted, your ass just fell off. Oh, well, you know, bring it along, honey. I might want to sit on it later. And she will. But see, when I drank, something happened to me that I'd never heard described by a social drinker. In fact, I don't know what Arizona's like, but in California we got a very large problem because the courts have now lowered the blood alcohol content for drunken driving down, I think it's below 1% or 1/10 of 1% or whatever that is. And now, you think you're hearing crap from these podiums today, just wait. They're sentencing social drinkers to A&A. Yeah. Wait till one of those boobs gets up here.
Oh my, I had half a glass of wine, my whole life got unmanageable. I turned myself into A&A, and I'm never gonna drink again as long as I live.
And they won't. They don't have to. But when I drank, something happened to me that was absolutely incredible. I had waited for it for 16 years. I was retarded. I didn't start drinking until I was 16. I love these ones that get started early, 4. But when I drank, all of a sudden, it would take about 3 triples to get it done, see, to get it started. And all of a sudden, all the terror was just ripped out. All of that terror was just ripped out. And all of a sudden, that God hole in my gut with that cold wind blowing through it that only the alcoholic knows about, that kind of started to heal over. And that ice cube with 8 million corners on it would start to thaw out. And it'd just get warm. And the whole world would just become soft and smooth and round. And all the sharp edges and rough corners would fall off. And it would be my pineapple. And then all of a sudden I'd cross across one line. And I'd step across a line into a land I call the land of Someday Isle. Someday I'll get it together, you know. But over there, with my blood alcohol content at just the right level, I could go anywhere I wanted to go, do anything I wanted to do, and be anybody I wanted to be. All I had to figure out is who you wanted me to be so you wouldn't throw me away. So I'd be part of the deal. But over there, I was as good as, I could measure up to and I'd be a part of. And over there, I could do the one thing I wanted to do all my life. See, I could just step out easy. That's all I ever wanted to do, just step out easy, be a part of. And I can tell you how you can step out easy in Alcoholics Anonymous. You take God in one hand, and you put your arm around a newcomer in the other, and hold them tight, and let them cry, and love them back home. You'll be stepping out easy. You won't even feel your feet on the ground. So, give me that crap about don't drink. Well, Jack, I'm an odds-on player. See, what are you going to give me that's going to replace that alcohol? Don't drink? Well, I don't think so. A bunch of trite, hackneyed cliches hanging on the musty, dusty walls of old beat-up Alano clubs like Easy Does It. Easy never did nothing. One day at a time? Oh, I don't think so. Not living on the edge like I did. Maybe I can last a nanosecond. That's about it for me. Live and let live. Oh, there's a good one. You get within 4 feet of my face and your life is in serious jeopardy. You just stay away from me. That's how I live and let live. And behind that booze, why, I could stuff all of those feelings and I could isolate all of those reactions, and I became an iceman in business. I was in property management. I used to serve eviction notices on Christmas Eve. Good chance they'd be home. Merry Christmas. And that's how I felt about myself, and so that's how I felt about you. So don't drink. Those are the magic tools I'm going to take out there on the bricks with me that are going to allow me to live comfortably with unsolved problems in a hostile universe? I don't think so. I don't really think so. And finally, I found a man that read the promises to me. 182 promises, and I wanted what he had. And those promises are all the way through the book. And he said, there's a trick, though, Ted. The only way you can get this deal is by taking some gentle, loving, God-given steps. And so, through the years, it's been my experience to be able to share the podium across the United States and Canada with the people that I've come to find and know as the masters of the program. And they're the ones that I learned this deal from. And I learned how it works. And it took a lot of years. Because I couldn't find anybody when I was new that really knew. My sobriety date, for those of you that are interested, is April Fool's Day, which is a good day for me, of 1968. And because of a magic deal called Alcoholics Anonymous and loving God and my own understanding and people like you, it has not been necessary for me to take a drink of alcohol or mind-altering chemicals since that day. You can start anywhere you want in this book, and you'll find promises. Like page 25, we have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we never even dreamed. They're all through the book, all through the book. The great fact for us is this and nothing less, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experience which has revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. And then there's another one of those great admonitions at the bottom of the page. If you are as seriously alcoholic as we believe there is no middle-of-the-road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. And if we passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we had but two alternatives. One, to go on to the bitter end, blotting out the consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could. The other, to accept spiritual help. And so we find that we have a threefold disease. We have an obsession of the mind, an allergy of the body, and a spiritual bankruptcy. And as long as I was able to keep my blood alcohol content at that level where I could step out easy, everything was fine. But another curious thing happened that only happens to 10% roughly of our population. All of a sudden, an incredible compulsion would be triggered, and I could not stop. That obsession of the mind would kick in, and I could not stop until I was done. I don't know if you understand done or not.
People would say, why do you drink so much?
Because I'm not done. Well, you're a real asshole when you drink like that. No, you don't understand. Until I start drinking like that, I'm an asshole. I don't care what you think, how I feel about me. And if I'm not a part of, and if I don't... And if I'm not as good as, and I don't measure up to, you know, I spent most of my childhood running around yelling, what's happening? You know, I wanted to know. Nobody'd tell me. So, we finally built a little workbook here, and there's a lot of guides to the inventory, and I have to tell you right now that I'm a fundamentalist, and I'm a big book man. And as far as I'm concerned, if it isn't in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it isn't. And I've found every answer to every question that I need to know in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But it took me a lot of years. So, normally in this deal, I hand out a bunch of pencils and we actually do some of this work. So if you got a pen or a pencil, why... You might want to try some of this. If you turn this deal, this little cartoon on the front came from a friend of mine because that's what my sponsor kind of prompted me into that. And I told him I thought I was ready to start the inventory and that I probably needed an 8-day Easter weekend and a chateau overlooking Lake Arrowhead and probably a computer to write the valedictorian of my career and. Because that's a big deal. And he said, nah, what you need is a dull crayon so you won't stab yourself to death and a used roll of toilet paper. And he never understood how sensitive I was. So when I picked up the crayon, the first thing I found out was that it weighs about 900 pounds. And so that's how this happened. You turn over to the back page, why we got the basic topics of the inventory broken down. And... We got the page references in the big book. This should be page 1. It's on the back, which is typically alcoholic. We're not organized. Page one is the last page, so far we're right on track here. And I make a promise to the people that I sponsor through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that promise is that if you are willing, and if you have read the first 4 chapters of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and if you have read the doctor's opinion, if you have satisfied those requirements, then I can move you from step 1 into step 9 in less than 1 day. And I'm going to show you just exactly how we do that. I just simply don't believe in killing people by procrastinating and putting this off. And time again, you'll hear people say, oh, well, I don't think you should do your inventory right yet. It's only been 4 years, and you might run into something that'll upset your id, and you might get drunk. And they don't understand that when that time comes, where there's no mental defense against taking the first drink, there's only one thing that'll save us. And that is the spiritual armor provided by the program that will save you and is guaranteed to save you at that time. Because my book says that as long as I am practicing the principles, just trying to practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in my daily affairs, and as long as I'm just trying to keep my spiritual house in order, I need never fear drinking again as long as I live. You may add one day at a time if you wish. But there's two gigantic hooks in that statement. One of them is that I've got to learn what the principles are so that I can put them into practice and then keep on practicing them. And the second one is I have to make some sort of attempt to get my spiritual house in order so that I can keep it in order. And the way I do that is through steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. And yet over and over again you'll hear these fools from the podium. And you'll hear sponsors say,
well, I do step 1, 2, and 3 every day.
How many of you have heard that? What they've just told you is that I'm getting ready to start to commence to begin and haven't done nothing. I wish people would get their driver's license that way, you know. God damn, I'd have all the freeways to myself. You know, they kind of look at their book and they say, well, I know damn well there's a driver in here somewhere and my life's a little unmanageable without that license. That's kind of step one. And then they'd make a decision that, or they'd come to believe that maybe some power greater than themselves, like the Department of Motor Vehicles, might restore them to sanity in this area. And then, by God, they'd make a decision, see, to go down to the DMV there and turn their thinking and their actions, which is the same as well in life, over to the DMV. Don't do it, though. I mean, for God's sake, don't go down there and take that little inventory that's called a test, which is kind of step four. Don't do that. And don't share the answer with them that you've come up with, which is kind of step five. And for God, don't ask God to help you pass that deal and then ask him, which is kind of six and seven. Don't do that. But by God, every morning, wake up and make a decision to go down there and keep taking the bus, folks. And that's kind of how step, that's about the effect of that. So I make a promise that we can get through into, not through step nine, because sometimes that's a lifetime deal, into step nine in less than one day. Step one is, admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Not that we're alcoholic, because oftentimes we don't learn to be alcoholics until we've been here a long time. You know, powerless over alcohol. That means that when that time comes that you want to stop, there's no human way that you can do it. When that desire to drink, when that mental obsession hits, we drink. See, the people that say don't drink no matter what don't even understand what an alcoholic is. See, because an alcoholic is a person who drinks no matter what. So, if you've admitted to yourself that you're an alcoholic and that your life is unmanageable, then you have satisfied the admonition for step one. That's the end of that. Step one in the old days during the Oxford group was done simply when the guy asked for help. In those days, they didn't allow women to be alcoholics. So, you just asked for help, and when one of these guys called on you and took a look at your apartment, it didn't take a rocket science to figure out your life had become unmanageable. And then in sharing across one heart to another, as we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, our experience, strength, and hope, this person that we were calling on, or in the early days, the Oxford group, who they were calling on, would come to believe that maybe some power greater than themselves could restore them to this same kind of honesty. Honesty equals sanity. The psychiatric definition for sanity is the maximum amount of honesty that we can acquire at any given time in our life. Because the more honest I become with myself, the less I can rationalize my own behavior. And rationalization is the invention of a socially acceptable excuse for socially unacceptable behavior. And socially unacceptable behavior is insanity. And depending on how crazy you are, is in direct proportion to how far away they put you if they can catch you. Let me say that all during this thing, if anybody has a question, please just raise your hand and we want feedback and crosstalk and all that stuff. So if anything's bothering you, why, please raise your hand and we'll see if we can't straighten that out. And no, I'm sorry we don't. One more time, we've fallen short. Find somebody you can intimidate into giving you a copy later. Just tell them you'll liable to get drunk if you don't get one. You'll get six. Then there's an interesting statement in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. One time I had the great privilege of speaking at Founders Day in Akron, Ohio. And when I was back there, I went to Dr. Bob's house, and I looked through some of the archives, and I talked to some of the old-timers, and I found out that's the way Dr. Bob sponsored people through the steps. A newcomer would come to his little house, and they would sit down, and when they would leave in the afternoon, they would be into Step 9. If you look at Bill Wilson's story on page 13, you will see where Bill Wilson himself went through all 12 steps in one afternoon in his hospital room, with the exception of the actual formal writing of the inventory and the actual formal making of amends. But on page 13, if you look at it very carefully, you can see all 12 steps sitting right there. There's a real interesting trigger statement in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's filled with them, actually. But right after the ABCs that you hear read at every meeting, where it says, our description of the alcoholic, our stories before and after, chapter of the agnostic, make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we're alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God couldn't, what if he were sought? So I doubt that there's 10 people in this whole audience that know what the next sentence says. Exactly. And it is the statement that tells you exactly and precisely where you are in the program, which is the 12 steps, and exactly where you need to go. And it says, just what this gentleman said, being convinced we were at step 3. Now, if you're not convinced of those three ideas, there's two ways to get convinced. The first way is do what the book says, go out and get drunk. You know, go to a bar, try it several more times. It may be worth a good case of the jitters in order to become convinced. And we'll just pray for you and hope that you can struggle back here. And I don't want to see anybody giving you another goddamn newcomer chip either. The other way is to read, reread, and read over again the doctor's opinion in the first four chapters in the Big Book, because they're designed to convince you of those three ideas. Being convinced of this, we're at step 3. Turn page over three times, turn the pages over twice, and in the middle of page 63 is the prayer for step 3. And it's very hard to do that for a lot of alcoholics, because we got to be cool. So I suggest you turn off all the lights, get a flashlight, get in the shower, lock the bathroom door. And, because this doesn't look good for be on your knees, you know. It's suggested that you do that step with somebody else. I do it over the phone, as if we were holding hands in God's universe. And I say, well, get on our knees right now, and we'll read that prayer. And we do that. And that's the end of that. See, because nowhere in my book does it say, well, you might have a different book. I'd like to read it if you do. No, I don't want to read it. Nowhere does it say that we do step 3 over and over and over. You'll hear people say, well, my sponsor, I had a little slippy poo, and my sponsor told me I have to start over with step 1. How the hell do you do that? Go get drunk again? That's how you do step 1, you know. So, then we're done with step 3. Now, an interesting thing happens, and there's very, very few people that know this sentence is in the Big Book. But at the top of page 64, it says, though our decision in step 3 was a vital and necessary one, which means it's kind of important, vital and necessary, it would have little lasting effect. Now, that's an interesting couplet. That means zero. Little lasting effect. Unless followed at once. Nobody knows those two words are in there. At once. Followed at once by a searching and fearless moral inventory. 5 minutes after you've been talking to me or anybody else that goes by the guidelines in this Big Book, you got the 900-pound crayon in one hand and a piece of paper in the other, and we're doing this inventory. Now let's have some fun with it. And you can do your inventory So fast. I had a guy from New York call me. I'll give you an example of how I do this over the phone. I had this guy from New York call me a number of years ago, and he was absolutely furious. He said, "You son of a bitch!" I said, "You got the right number." I heard one of your tapes, and I heard where you can get somebody into step 9 in less than one day, and that's just a bunch of crap. I said, "You're really angry, aren't you?" He says, "You're damn right." I said, "Wow." I said, "Let me ask you a question. You have a big book there somewhere?" "Well," he says, "you're damn right." I said, "Do you have a pencil, piece of paper?" He said, "Well, I can get one." I said, "Well, get one." He's in New York. I'm in Los Angeles. He comes back. He said, "Well, I got a pencil and piece of paper." I said, "Well, why don't you read those ABCs there on page 59 or 60 and page 60. And he said, "Yeah, I see that." I said, "Well, are you convinced of that?" He said, "Well, you're damn right." I said, "Well, listen, there's a prayer that might help you with some of this anger, and it's over on page 63. I didn't tell him it was his third step prayer. 5 years sober, you ought to know. I said, "There's a prayer there." I said, "Why don't you go in your bedroom, get on your knees, read that prayer, and call me back?" And he did that. Then he made a terrible mistake. He said, "What should I do now?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I said, I tell you what, you're so damn angry. Why don't you just make a list of everything you're angry at? Just everybody you're pissed off at, people, places, things, institutions, philosophy, the whole damn thing. Just make a list. It should take you about 7 minutes. I mean, if you're really pissed off." He says, "Well, all right." And I said, "Call me back." He did that. He said, "What should I do now?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." I said, "Maybe, I'll tell you what." I said, "Why don't you make a list of everything you're afraid of?" "Yeah, it'll take you about 4 minutes, brave as you are. Call me back." And he did that. And he said, "What should I do now?" I said, "Well, why don't you make a list of everybody that you've harmed sexually?" And he said, "Well, all right, it hadn't been very many people." And he called me back, and he said, "What should I do now?" And I said, "Well," I said, "why don't you go to that first list, see? And if you notice, we're following this outline on the back of this workbook exactly." I said, "Why don't you write a couple of sentences about why you're so damn angry at these people?" And he said, "Okay." And then he called me and he shared that. And we went over it. Now, I prefer to go into the details of this fifth step, or the details of this writing in the fifth step. So what the truth was here, what's my responsibility, what might have been done differently, and all that is discussed in the fifth step so we can get really clear on it. Because if you leave it up to these boobs to write it, why, you know, "Oh, let's see, it wasn't my responsibility. A guy broke my foot, you know." "Oh, well, why was your foot under his hammer?" You know. And then then he wrote a couple of sentences about why he was afraid, and then he called and shared that, and then he shared the sex inventory with me. Now, when it comes to that sex part, about 90%, 92% of the women that I sponsor through the steps have been the victim of incest, brutality, rape, abuse. And I tell you, a very high percentage of the men, 75%. Now, this inventory is set up to handle every single thing that might be bothering you from your past. Because the magic of this program lies in this, that if we can somehow eliminate all of the guilt, shame, and remorse of the past, and if we can somehow eliminate the fear of the future, guilt is always in the past, and fear is always in the future. If we can do that, then we can journey into the past in fond memory, and we can journey into the future, into our goals, our ambitions, and our desires. We can journey into that with no fear. And that's where we want to go. So if we can be in the past in just fond memory, and in the future with no fear, that leaves me, finally and at last, in the one place I always wanted to be, right here, now, in this moment, with you. In the present. And God, what a gift. And so he shared this stuff, and I said, he said, what should I do now? And I said, well, there's a prayer over here, and I said, it's on page 76, and I said, it's the second paragraph, and I didn't tell him it was a seventh step prayer.
I was going to let him guess.
He didn't know it was anyway, I could tell. I said, why don't you get down on your knees and do that prayer and call me back? And he did. And we've been on the phone about a total of an hour and 45 minutes, all on his dime. And he called me back, and I said, well, you know, you don't sound so angry now. He said, well, I'm really not. And I said, you know, being sober 5 years, you've probably made two or three amends already, haven't you? He said, well, yeah, of course. I said, well, you're into step nine, and less than one day has passed. And then the quote came that I'll never forget. He said, well, what about that damned inventory you're supposed to do? And I said, you just did it. And that's how it's done. See, because it's never perfect, and it's never finished. So don't make a big deal out of it. Let's just do something. So get started on it. And make a list of everybody you're pissed off at. You're not going to take long. Put your name first. Put your mother and dad second and third. Whether you had one or not. Yeah. And then make the list of fears. You might want to put your name first on that list. God, if I'd known what I was going to do to me, I'd have been terrified. I even tried to commit suicide one time. Went upstairs and got my 45 automatic out from under my pillow. I kept it there because they were after me. You don't have to be paranoid to know they're after you. I qualified expert with a 45. I hit what I aim at, and I jacked a shell in the chamber, took dead aim between my eyes, and blew a $90 mirror off the wall. Scared my tenant so bad he ran right out and joined AA. 6 years later. Terrible drinker. And then you make that list of the sex inventory, and you may damn well want to put your name first on that list. And of course that third list is weird. That's where small farm animals get into the inventory. And I still tell my sponsor, I said, no, Luke, no, I was helping the goat over the fence. Hey, most people don't even know how to make love to a goat, for God's sake. On their back, it's easier to kiss them that way. And then we, as we go through that fifth step, I try to give a person an answer for each thing. I don't just sit there and let them read this whole damn thing. In fact, once you get down to about the fifth name on the resentment list, you can just put ditto marks anyway. I mean, it's just oh yeah, you know. And then we find out where we were at fault and what we might have done differently. And then we look for an answer as to what to do to get rid of this resentment. Do we owe these people an amends? Do we have to write them a letter? If they've died, many people's parents have died, or a loved one, they still have a tremendous resentment against them, and it's not finished. And so I tell these people to write a letter to this person, in the first person, just like they were there, and share all the things they always wanted to share and somehow never had time, and talk about all the things they always wanted to talk about and somehow never could. In the first person, just like they were there. And when you're finished with that letter, why, go some quiet place and read it out loud to them, just like they were there. And when you're finished, burn it. And a magic will happen for you that you'll never experience until you try it. The little gal I sponsor has lost her, she lost her son when he was 4 years old. And he'd be 14 now. And she writes a letter to him 3 or 4 times a year. And I can kind of always tell when she's done that. And she just keeps him current with what's going on, because I don't believe in closure and saying goodbye and all of that. And I can tell when she's done that, because she looks real happy. Is there a hand with a question back there? Yes. Okay, the question was that I hadn't mentioned yet, the people that have harmed us, and the book says that they may be spiritually sick. And this comes a great deal with incest and brutality and abuse, and that we have to pray for them. And there's a terrific prayer, and that's a prayer on page 552, in Freedom from Bondage. And when I was about 10 years sober, why, a man did great damage to me and my family. And I have to promise you that I am fully capable of first-degree premeditated murder, drunk or sober, if somebody harms my family. And I had to use that damn prayer. And I had to use it for 2 years. The admonishment in the book is 2 weeks. No way. And the prayer started out real simple in the beginning. It says that we pray for them to receive everything that we want for ourselves. And my prayer was, I pray to God that rotten son of a bitch gets everything that's coming to him. That's the best I could do. And 2 years went by, and I met him at a party. And I walked up to him and I said, "How are you?" And I checked inside and there was nothing. Nothing. From first degree premeditated murder to zero. And then he started to tell me how I was, and I said, "You know, I really don't give a damn." And I checked inside again and there was nothing. And so if something can have the power to do that, it's got to be a God-given deal. Does that kind of answer your question? Pardon? Oh, okay. Well, I think I had. I was going to fake it. No, thank you for... Please, anything that I skip or any question, why bring it to my attention, because I certainly can't keep track of all of this stuff. Yes. Yeah, we really haven't gotten there yet. So, we go over this inventory in step 5. And we find out whether we need to make amends or whether these people are spiritually sick, and we need to pray for them or write a letter to them. But more often than not, why, there's something that we can do. Get into action. See, that's the deal. There's something that we can do that will help us clean up our side of the street so that we no longer have this resentment. Because my book tells me that resentments are the number one killer. And then we turn to step 6 and 7. And I don't understand book studies about these steps. I mean, they study them using the 12 and 12, which in my opinion is a fishing trip. There's no action in that book that I've found. Step 6, there's one little paragraph on page 76. And there's one little paragraph for the prayer in step 7. And before you do that, though, what I want you to do, after you've shared your inventory, is come home and turn to the page in the big book, which I think is one of the most important pages. Every page is important, but some of them are a little more important than the other. And that's page 75. People often say, where does the spiritual side of the program start? Where does this deal really start? If you look at page 75, you'll find 10 promises on that page. This is long before the 12 promises on 83 and 84. Now on page 75, it says, we are preparing an arch through which we will walk, a free person. On page 75, it says, if the obsession to drink has not been removed prior to this point. We will feel it leaving us now. I happen to belong to the group of people who have had the obsession removed almost at their first meeting. That happens to about 50% of us. The rest of you will have to wait until possibly you reach page 75, where it's promised to be removed. So hurry on, lest that test come before you're ready, the test that says there's no mental defense against taking the first drink. On page 75, it says all fears will fall away. Now, you won't know that till sometime later on, while you screw up the courage to take the risk, to do the one thing that terrified you, and find out that through a power greater than yourself, a loving God of your own understanding, the application of some gentle loving steps in a group called Alcoholics Anonymous, that fear has been removed. 7 years, I worked for 20 years on the National Ski Patrol, and I have terminal acrophobia, fear of height. I can't get on a three-legged bar stool without a parachute and a backup. So what am I going to do? I mean, I learned years ago the difference between a hero and a coward. It's booze. Yeah. So I invented the drinking man's ski pole. Huh. Now, I want to tell you that each one of those ski poles will hold a pint, and if you fill that with Ron Rico, Purple Label, 157-proof rum, you don't care how high, how low, how fast, or how slow. All you know is, go for it. And so, when I got sober, I couldn't go skiing anymore. 7 years on this program with a lot of prayer and a lot of writing and a lot of inventory and a lot of sharing, while I finally got to the basic reasons for my fear. That's my damn mother. And she didn't do the best job she could. That pisses me off when I hear people say that.
Yeah, my parents did the best job they could.
They could have done a whole bunch better. They just didn't know any better. And she used to say things like, don't climb up there, you'll kill yourself. You get over 4 feet high, you're going to die. I used to tell my little daughter, just hang on tight so you won't fall. We never talked about the rest of that crap. And the stuff that parents tell us is just that it's no wonder we're crazy. I was going up in the mountains not too long ago with a guy, and he didn't like to smoke in his car, so he stopped for a smoke break, and I had to go off the side of the hill there to relieve myself for a minute, and it was real steep. It was on the way up to Lake Arrowhead, and it was that real slick, loose, decomposed granite. And all of a sudden, I heard him say, Ted, don't fall, and watch out for the snakes. And I started laughing hysterically. And I climbed back up, and he said, what were you laughing so hard at? I said, you were doing Dad. Gave me two of the most useless, futile, nonsensical pieces of advice I've ever heard in my life. How do you don't fall? That's like don't drink. Christ, yeah. And watch out for the snakes. Why? Do I want to pet one? I remember when my little daughter was faced with the same problem, I said, look, when you start down there, it's real slippery, so bend your knees, slide with the gravel, and keep big bushes right close at hand, so in case you slip, you can grab one. And make plenty of noise, so just in case there might be a snake, he'll get scared away. Now, she can use that. And through all of this, see, I was able to give my daughter the blessing of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was able to give her the blessing that a parent is supposed to be able to give their child. And the blessing is that you are unconditionally loved with uncritical acceptance no matter what. No matter what. My little daughter could do no wrong. Consequently, she never has. And it wouldn't matter if she did. But she got that blessing. I had to wait until I was 40 years old to get the blessing from you people. And it took a long, long time before it was internalized, before I experienced it, understood it, and was able to accept it. It was a lot of years before I knew where I exist experientially that I was unconditionally loved with uncritical acceptance. So 7 years on this program, I found myself at an AA party, and we were on top of one of those big buildings in Century City, 26 stories in the air, and it had a penthouse, and it had a patio outside, and all of a sudden I was moved to go to the edge of the patio, and there's a parapet there, and all of a sudden I got the feeling that I ought to look over the parapet, and I went over and I looked straight down 26 floors, not something I'd never been able to do in my entire life, and I realized all fear of height had been removed forever. Never to be returned. I didn't really believe it. So I got up on the parapet and walked around a little bit. God saying, no, don't test me. The wind comes up, you're out of here. But the magic was that now I could return to the mountains of my childhood and climb into those gondolas and those chairlifts with no fear of heights whatsoever, without having to use any alcohol or mind-altering chemicals to get over the fear. Only now, I take my little 5-year-old daughter with me. She was only 5 then. 5 years sober. And I give newcomers a prayer. I give them 3 prayers when I'm speaking. And the first one is that I pray to God you can just keep coming back and listening to the music until you can understand the words. Listening to the music of alcoholics may be able to laugh at themselves for the first time in their lives. The healing magic of the laughter and the love. For the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've seen heal broken and shattered human beings that no human power could ever have healed. And although I make a lot of fun of the Al-Anons, because they're funny, I've seen the program of Al-Anon heal broken and shattered relationships that no human power could have ever healed. And the loving program of Alateen that I've seen heal those broken and shattered little kids. And I'll never forget the first Alateen meeting that I went to, and there's about 35 kids there, and the speaker was up there, and his left arm was in an airplane splint with a steel strut going from his elbow to his pelvis. And he was telling those kids how his daddy loved him and how he understood and knew that his daddy had a disease called alcoholism, and that his daddy didn't mean it when he picked him up above his head in a drunken fit and threw him into a fireplace and shattered his collarbone. And he loved his daddy. Because he knew he had a disease and that he was sick. And any program that can do that kind of healing, I want all of it I can get. Because I believe it's the greatest gift God's given to mankind in over 2,000 years. Second prayer I give the newcomers is please pray God, just put your hand in ours and come with us. See, because we've been there and we know the way and it'll be okay. But hang on real tight and don't let go, because if you let go, we're going to lose you. We don't want to lose anybody, not if we can help it. And the third prayer, the really hard one, is please pray God, let us love you until you can learn to love yourself. Because until I can love myself, I cannot love you. Until I am at peace and ease with myself, I cannot be at peace and ease with you. It's all an inside job. All of it. Until I finally believe in myself, I can't believe in you. And so I was able to take my little daughter skiing, and I put her in ski school, and it wasn't too long before she came to me, and she said, can I go up in the big mountain with you, Daddy? And I said, sure. And I checked with her instructor, because I'm a certified instructor, but I can't teach anybody anything that I'm emotionally involved with. And that's one of the biggest problems we have in relationships, because we try to pick something with a person we love, and I can't do that, because see, what happens is that I'll put expectations on them, and then those expectations won't be fulfilled, and then I get angry, because she's supposed to be perfect. So I put her in ski school, one of the best instructors I knew, and she asked me if she'd go up in the big mountain. I said, sure. And we climbed that chairlift together, and as we started up in the mountain, we got further and further away from the lodge, and we got higher and higher on the mountain. She began to get more and more frightened. She started to cry. And I didn't have to say those things that parents say to kids when they do that. I didn't have to tell her that big girls don't cry. I didn't have to tell her there was nothing to be afraid of. Oh, yeah? What I told her was, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Just hang on tight. As we got off the chairlift, and I helped her off the chair, she looked up at me with a tear-stained little eyes and her fear-filled little face, and she said, Daddy, you just don't understand. She said, I'm just a tiny little beginner, and you're a great big professional. And that's where that second prayer came back to me, like it always does when I need help. Your prayers come back to me. And I looked down there and I said, well, honey, I tell you what, I am a professional. And we're going to pretend like we're going to play a little game. I said, just pretend like you got your hand in mine and come with me. Because I know the way, it'll be okay. But hang on real tight. Don't let go. Because if you let go, I'm going to lose you. And I don't ever want to lose you. And that's the way we went down the dark of the mountain all the way, my little daughter and I, never falling. When we got to the bottom, she looked up at me with laughter in her face and sunshine in her eyes, and she said, Daddy, can we do it again? And without you people and a magic deal called Alcoholics Anonymous, I'd have missed it all. In 12 years on this program, the guy that I loved more than most people I've ever known, got the name of Chuck Chamberlain, had asked me to be the opening night speaker at the Palm Springs Roundup. I was 12 years sober. That was Roundup was the first Roundup I'd ever gone to in sobriety. And I was I was 2 months sober, 4 weeks. And when all those people at that meeting, 5,000 of them held hands to say the Lord's Prayer, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. And the magic touched me that was absolutely incredible. And I made a prayer. And I said, God, if there is any way that I can give back what I've received this night, I'm willing to go to any length. And I've been doing that ever since, in any way that I could. And 12 years later, that dream came true. And I stood up in front of 5,000 of you guys and you gals. And as I felt your love wash over me, in one glorious instant, all fear of people, places, and things was removed from me forever, never to be returned. By the grace of a loving God, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so the great promise in step 5 on page 75 comes true, and all fears will fall away. On page 75 it says, though you may have had certain spiritual beliefs prior to this point, you will now begin to have a spiritual experience. We will sense the nearness of our Creator, and we will feel as if we are walking on the broad highway, hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. You will have brushed the face of God. You will have established a conscious contact with a power greater than yourself. All right there on page 75 and 6 more promises. I think it's the greatest gift that God has given to mankind in over 2,000 years. I almost missed it. You can't get to page 75 by turning there, see, because it's sandwiched right in between step 5 and 6, exactly like what it is, a gift from God, and there's only two things you can do with it. You can throw it away and never know, or you can humbly accept it and live forever in eternal gratitude for the loving program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yes. Yes. The question is, how do you achieve uncritical acceptance? If you follow the steps in writing about a resentment against somebody, and you understand the descriptions in the book that people that have harmed you very often are sick people, you will come to the point where you will realize that each one of us is God's gift, perfect in his own creation, doing the very best he can in the only way that he knows, and therefore it no longer is any of my business what he does or who he is. And I don't have to criticize him. And I don't believe that if there is not a positive reaction to be gained from something, then don't do it.